awesome to be here. This is the first time I've done this in the night service, probably the last after that, so I apologise. We are in the middle of a series at Mark. I'm even getting your name wrong, Mike. That's what I do when I'm nervous, I'm sorry. Mark kicked off last week, called A Generous Life. So this is called A Generous Life Part 2. I thought that was a really unique title for a sermon. And just for a quick recap for those who weren't here last week, Mike pretty much just did a rundown on what is generosity and a kingdom Jesus view of generosity versus a worldview and this culture that we're living in that tells us more, 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 take, 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 have, we'll be happy, 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 just to finish off the trio of words. And that generosity is not a personality as such, but a value or a virtue that we have to intentionally practice and continue to become and transform in. Just as I was thinking about this, the first thing I came back to for myself was just remembering who the God is that we serve, and He is an astonishingly generous God. And before we go any further, I think it's so important to remember that He created this world. He gave us life. He gave us His Son to walk alongside us and help us live it. And so generosity isn't just this compartmentalized part of our life that we should try and switch on like a tap from time to time, kind of like justice. But it's a call, it's a serious call to reflect His generosity and His heart and His love in our own little spheres, our communities, where we are, as much as we possibly can. I love N.T. Wright. He says, the kingdom that Jesus preached and lived was all about a glorious, uproarious, absurd generosity. Think of the best things you could do for the worst person and go ahead and do it. And the first person I thought of, there's no one in this room. Does anyone work for Sutherland Shire Council? Hopefully not. Are you a parking inspector? Hopefully not. I got a $257 fine on Tuesday, and I'm not happy about it. And I'm not going to tell you the dialogue that went through my mind when I saw that. Anyway, absurd generosity. There are countless stories and teachings in the New Testament that urges this kind of radical kingdom generosity. I'm just going to read a quick passage, Luke chapter 6. I think it's up on the screen. Verse 27, Jesus says, but to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on the cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great and you will be children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. And I kind of read passages like this and go, whoa, what the heck? That's a lot of information and a lot of instructions in one go. And kind of feel this feeling of just needing to try and strive to become that, to become Luke 6. But really, we get it just by following Jesus and spending more time with Him. and we can see that all through the New Testament as well. People like Zacchaeus, you know, he had one meal with Jesus. And all of a sudden in Luke 19, he stands up and says, look, Lord, here now I give half of my possessions to the poor. If I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. So an encounter with Jesus leads to extreme generosity, and I love that. So that was kind of the first thought I wanted to say, is the more we hang out with our astonishingly generous God, the more we are going to transform ourselves. Kind of like I spend, I'm like 10 seconds in a room with a British person and I've adopted their accent instantly. Like I can't say that I become a generous person that instantly, but that would be awesome to try one day. Generosity isn't about sprinkling some feel-good sunshine and kindness around. Well, it is, but it's God's fundamental key to actually revolutionizing the world. I know that's a really bold claim, Generosity isn't about making the world simply better, it's about making it new. Generosity is restorative. It reveals God's goodness, his compassion, his justice, his heart for humanity, his heart for this broken world and system. Generosity is God's love expressed through an array of currencies, not just money. Not just money, currencies of kindness, of time, of energy, attention, patience, forgiveness. Generosity is all of Jesus' parables and metaphors come to life. It's the city on a hill, it's salt and light, it's seeking out the lost sheep. And so if this is what generosity is, then it's surely the theme of our existence. And what a privilege it is that he calls us to do this with him. The second thing is that this is actually not our home. One of the biggest threats to living generously is getting on board with this illusion that where we are is where we're going to stay. We're actually just passing through here for some 80, 85 years, maybe more if you're lucky. Ecclesiastes 3:11, God has planted eternity in the human heart. We're just here on a temporary assignment. And so that means that we should look at ourselves just as trustees of what we have. God owns everything, and we have been given this extraordinary privilege of being a trustee of that. And so perhaps when we look at our lives that way, it makes it a little bit easier to live with an unclenched fist. And the reality is that the prince of this age, or aka the enemy, he knows this, and he wants us to forget these revelations and to cease having them. In John 10:10, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. And I think in the topic of generosity, he's a stealer, he's a robber. He robs our attention and our focus by the myriad of things in our culture that tug of war our time. And so I'm going to blitz through four of them, maybe five if there's time. We're living in a culture that fosters addictions, mindsets, distractions, that causes us to forget who we are and what we're made for. And so now we're constantly needing to have these teshuva moments, which is something that Brad spoke about. I think maybe earlier in the year, teshuva is a phrase that means to come back to the path, to realign, to reassess what our values are, and is that mirroring the heart of God and his values too. And so in this sense, the way that we're spending our time and our energy and our money. So the first threat, we're going to call them, to generous living is digital distortion. I just liked the double D sound, really. It means nothing. I'm not actually going to talk too much on this one. We've got a quick video clip to show, so I'll let that speak for itself.
Did you know the average person spends 4 years of his life looking down at a cell phone? Kind of ironic, ain't it? How these touch screens can make us lose touch. But it's no wonder in a world filled with iMacs, iPads, and iPhones, so many eyes, so many selfies, not enough us's and we's. See, technology has made us more selfish and separate than ever. Because while it claims to connect us, connection has gotten no better. And let me express first, Mr. Zuckerberg, not to be rude, but you should reclassify Facebook to what it is, an anti-social network. Because while we may have big friend lists, so many of us are friendless all alone, because friendships are more broken than the screens on our very phones. We sit at home on our computers measuring self-worth by numbers of followers and likes, ignoring those who actually love us. It seems we'd rather write an angry post and talk to someone who might actually hug us. Am I bugging? You tell me, because I asked a friend the other day, let's meet up face to face. They said, all right, what time do you want to Skype? I responded with OMG, SRS, and then a bunch of SMHs, and realized, what about me? Do I not have the patience to have conversation without abbreviation? This is the generation of media overstimulation. Chats have been reduced to snaps. The news is 140 characters. Videos are 6 seconds at high speed. And you wonder why ADD is on the rise faster than 4G LTE. But get a load of this. Studies show the attention span of the average adult today is 1 second lower than that of a goldfish. So if you're one of the few people or aquatic animals that have yet to click off or close this video, congratulations. Let me finish my saying.
Pretty cool, hey? Pretty, well, not cool, actually. I didn't like being compared to a goldfish, for starters. But how hectic is that? How hectic is that? Our attention span is now 1 second less than Dory from Finding Nemo. She's not even a goldfish. What am I saying? I don't even really know what to add. I think that kind of just kind of speaks for itself, really. There's so many studies coming out now of the effects of what all this screen time is doing to us. Just for a couple of stats. Australian young adults, 18 to 29 years, so that's the majority of us in here except Greg, Nicol and Mike. sorry. 99% are on social media. 79% check it the first thing they do in the morning. 40%, that's nearly half, feel anxious when they're unable to access their social media accounts, actually experience anxiety. And just for the lulz, 17% of young men use social media on the toilet in comparison to 12% of women. So we didn't quite escape that one. And I'm not just talking social media as well. Anything screen time, video games, pornography. It's an $100 billion industry in itself. The consequences of that, which we heard a few weeks ago from Ryan, these things are impairing our ability to be generous with our attention and our time in relationships. It's impairing our ability to look someone in the eye and go, hey, how you doing? How you going? Tell me more about that. We're logging in and out of our relationships electronically. And our the next generation coming through, I think they're called Gen Alpha. They're the first generation essentially to have been immersed in this from birth. So it's going to be interesting to see in sort of the next 10, 20 years, what is the cost of not being able to switch off going to be? We can't hear God's voice and the way he wants us to when we're consumed with this stuff. It's so hard. It's so loud. It's like white noise. Is white noise like the television static? It's like that all day, every day. And just as a quick disclaimer, I said to a couple of people earlier tonight, I'm so nervous, actually, at the moment. I'm usually okay with public speaking, but I'm so nervous because I struggle with this, and I personally struggle with the other sort of threats that we're going to come to as well. And so I'm standing up here, and not in a self-deprecating way, saying that I suck, but in a way of going, can you hold me accountable to this? Because I think that's really important. I've got some very special and valuable relationships in this room, some that have been constant, some that have fluctuated because of this stuff, and we have to call it out, except my flatmate who lives with me for 7 days. If you do that every day, I might have to move out, but you can do it once a week. No, I'm kidding. just as a quick story to put this case in point, on Thursday it was Are You Okay Day, and that is this awesome online movement to raise more awareness and generate more conversation around the issue of suicide in Australia. And I posted online, I posted on my Inspire Instagram, something really inspiring, did all the hashtags. I typed, are you okay, into my phone and sent it to a number of close people. And I didn't actually realize this until writing this earlier in the week. Did I respond to the text messages that came back to me? No, I didn't. Did I follow up later with a phone call? No, I didn't. Did I remember to ask that question again face-to-face to the people I sent that text message to? No, I didn't. And I probably spent 10 minutes that night before bed going through my Instagram feed once more. So as much as I love those movements of are you okay, is it translating into real action? It probably does for a lot of people, but for me this year it didn't. And that was something, that I myself have to obviously really look at, especially when you're preaching on it. Are You Okay Day is around suicide in Australia. As I said, we're number four in the world. New stats came out last year that it's reached a 10-year high. There are 41,000 attempts in the last 12 months between the ages of 12 and 17, and now 8 children and young people every week are suiciding. 8 children who are crying out for generous people to be attentive and to listen and to look them in the eye, to look up from screens and ask them how they're doing. Headspace is a very large mental health organization here, and their latest statistic is that every death in a high school by suicide has a potential ripple effect to 3 more schools in the surrounding area. And then I found a statistic that could potentially trump that. There is a school of compassion in the United States, and I love this, that there's even a school of compassion. They study it. They study the practice of it. Every act of generosity and kindness has the potential to ripple effect to 4 more people. So that's 1 more on the stat of 3. So if we can lift up our eyes from our screen, be where we are, be present. I wonder if some of these stats will begin to change. The second threat is called hurried sickness, which is actually a thing, probably. I reckon it's not. I don't know. I'm just talking. I'm not a doctor. The age of busy. We're living in the age of busy. 2 in 3 Aussies say, our age again, that they're busy all the time and they really enjoy it, yet 1 in 2 say they report high levels of stress and 1 in 4 report high levels of psychological stress. So that doesn't really add up. It doesn't really look like the idea of being busy and hurried is a good thing. Busyness is a choice. I know I answer like this when people sort of say, oh, how you doing, Gemma? And you go, oh, I'm busy, you know, so busy. It's this new sort of this badge of honor or worthiness. I don't know what it is that displays just how important we are, all of the million things we have to do and multitask. But this is a threat to generosity, because generous living is focused living. It's not this scatterbrained needing to do 20 million things at once. It's okay to say no. It's okay to rest. And rest is actually a very biblical principle that God says a lot. Being generous with our attention and focus with God, with our relationships. I love this metaphor. It's like a focused beam of light. And when you focus a beam of light, like a laser focused on one fixed point, it's strong enough to cut through steel. And that's not a Geminical metaphor. That's Rick Warren from Purpose Driven Life. I'd better quote that one. Isaiah 43:19 says, be alert, be present. I'm about to do something brand new. It's bursting out. Don't you see it? I'm making a road through the desert. If we don't slow down, if we don't take the badge of busy off, we're gonna miss it. We're gonna miss these divine moments in our everyday, those moments of impact that Jesus wants us to be a part of in bringing restoration and healing and life and joy and everything he has to someone's world, whether it's the person in the elevator, the person in front of you and the coffee queue. Be still, the Lord says, Psalm 46:10. It's everywhere in the Bible. Matthew 11:28-30, he says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So really encourage you if you're kind of running overtime, maybe just go and marinate in that one for a little bit, because I tried to do it today. Emphasis on the word tried. But It's like, whoa, okay, stop, be still, be alert, be present, be attentive. It's okay to not get caught up in the busy fad, because when you say no, you're actually saying yes to something greater. Again, you're saying yes to hearing his voice louder. Third threat, I don't know how I'm going for time. Might have to blitz through this stuff. Instant gratification. We are in an increasingly impatient and results-driven culture. We want it fast. We want it now. Instantaneous, fast money. Let's jump into debt, take some shortcuts. More now. We write people off if they don't deliver quickly. You might have been in a job for 8 months and you quit if you just feel like you haven't made any impact. I don't know. We run away instead of wait now. But living a generous life is living a patient life. That's hard sometimes, a lot. The word patience comes from the Greek word makrothumia. If you're a Bible head in here, I'm really sorry if I offended you with the bad pronunciation. And that word means a long fuse or a slow burn, long fuse. And that is so countercultural to the culture that we're living in today. James 5:7, be patient. Then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming, see how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm because the Lord's coming is near. Actually, my whole year has been about patience, really. For those of you who know, I run a dance school and we've just moved into a beautiful new building in Miranda that I actually first walked through December last year. So we're sort of kind of heading on 10 months now. And that has been just one of the longest, grueling processes ever. And I think up until that point, I was so used to being comfortable and things happening quite quickly. And but this was a journey of having to wait, of having to be patient and believing in God's word and in his promise for me personally, for that building that I know that he spoke to me so clearly about back in March. He actually spoke to me in a dream, and if that kind of sounds a little bit foreign, the God can speak in a myriad of ways, and for me, I have crazy dreams. And I won't, you know, go into details, but basically I woke up with Isaiah 30:23 in my head. Isaiah 30:23. Had never read that passage before. And it says, he will send you rain for the seed you sow in the ground, and that the food that comes from the land will be rich and plentiful. And basically this new chapter, this new building was such a huge financial risk. And so I believe that he had spoken to me so clearly back in March that his promise was to pull this through and to see this happen. But getting, you know, later on down the year in August and it still hadn't happened, it's very easy to doubt that word. I actually wanted to run away to France. I think I told a couple of people that was really weird. Fight or flight. Logical response. Something doesn't go your way quick enough, go to France. Anyway, God may call us to live generously in an area, usually our gifts and talents, that we may not even see the results, fruit or full promise of. Because we're not only stewards of what we have and see right now in our hands, but we're also stewards of what will be and what we do not see. And there's a beautiful, beautiful passage in Hebrews 11. I just like to call it the by faith chapter. And we're not going to read it all, but it basically says, you know, by faith Abraham did this, by faith Noah did this, by faith. I really encourage you to read it if you haven't. Goes through all these incredible stories, incredible journeys, faith journeys. And it says in a number of them that these people didn't even see the fruit or the outworking of what God had promised them because they were stewarding something that they were believing for and couldn't see. And that promise, you know, may have come 50 or 100 years so later down the track. And so I'm learning to try and apply that to Inspire as well. You know, he's given me this big vision. And I might not even see the promise of that. That could take 2 or 3 or 4 more generations to see that happen as a result of what I'm planting and believing in now. So that kind of countercultures all that instant gratification stuff. The very last one. Fame and success. Yeah. Like the guy said in the video, This is very much the I generation. It's so easy to get caught up in outworking our generosity, you know, almost as this fashion statement or performance online, you know, with our brands. So easy to get caught up in that. But generosity isn't about giving for all to see. It's about giving your all, basically. I love this quote by Bob Goff. He's a good guy. He says, I don't know him personally. That sounded like I did, but I don't. He says, I used to be afraid of failing at the things that really mattered to me, but now I'm more afraid of succeeding at things that don't matter. And yeah, he writes a book called Love Does. I really encourage you to get on that if you can. But basically that's just in the context of him going through a season of just really wanting to make sure everyone around him knew he was generous, and feeling like he wasn't a success if X, Y, and Z, you know, in his life didn't know. And all the little stumblings he came through to realize that actually doesn't matter. If we get caught up in fame and success, we're asking the wrong question. The worldview is to constantly ask, what's my dream? God, you know, would you come on board with my dream and bless my vision and my ministry and, you know, me. And we forget that the kingdom view of generous living is actually, God, what's your dream? And where can I help you? Help me to help you. Help me to get on board with what you're doing, and get me out of the road. I think Jesus does this so many times in the New Testament. He ditches the idea of success by pursuing the one. I encourage you to read Matthew 5. Again, not going to go through it because I'm just sort of blabbering now. But in Matthew 5, Jesus, you know, is swept up by all these crowds, and he has every opportunity to stand up on his platform and inspire the masses. But instead, he stops for the lady who touches his garment and he ministers to her. He goes to Jairus' house and raises his dead daughter to life. You know, he stopped for the one when he had every moment to preach to the masses and build his following, build his Instagram profile. He didn't dominate the world with a program and huge following, but instead he created hope and change wherever he was, at whatever time he was there. And I think that's essentially what generous living looks like in a day-to-day basis. Last little thought, get comfortable with the uncomfortable. How uncomfortable are we willing to get about things? Because if we're going to live a generous life, things are going to get a little bit messy. You know, if we're talking about walking alongside the refugee or the homeless, the elderly, any, you know, the recovering alcoholic, the drug addict, living generously can be messy. There's a quote by C.S. Lewis. He says, if our giving does not at all pinch or hamper us, I would say it's too small. So I think we're meant to feel uncomfortable when it comes to living generously. And regardless of our shortcomings and our inabilities, he wants to use us. So don't get head faked into thinking that you don't have anything to offer. If your wallet isn't doing too good at the moment, think of a different currency. If you can't bring a birthday present to the party, bring a funny joke. That's a terrible metaphor. No matter what you don't have to give, there is always something you do have. The blind man can still hear and the deaf man can still see. We have so much at our fingertips, so let's use it and let's encourage one another to stray from the cultural script of being busy, of being online, of everything else, having success, having things instantly. Stray away from that script and follow a kingdom narrative that we have right here in his word and through his spirit as well. So, yeah, that's all I got for you.